Hi everyone, welcome back to Dhamma Threads with Mandesa Jata and Leslie Kristen. And we're going to, for this session we're going to be looking at the verses of Sunita, which is the number 12.2 in the Theragata, which you can read on Sutta Central. So here's the verses. This is a longer selection than most of the ones we've looked at, and it has a narrative structure to it. I was born in a low-class family, poor, with little to eat. My job was lowly. I threw out the old flowers. Shunned by people, I was disregarded and treated with contempt. I humbled my heart and paid respects to many people. Then I saw the Buddha, honored by the Sangha of monks, the great hero entering the capital city of Magadha. I dropped my carrying pole and approached to pay respects. Out of compassion for me, the supreme man stood still. When I had paid respects at the teacher's feet, I stood to one side and asked the most excellent of all beings for the going forth. Then the teacher, being sympathetic and having compassion for the whole world, said to me, "Come, monk." That was my full ordination. Staying alone in the wilderness without laziness, I did what the teacher said, as the conqueror had advised me. In the first watch of the night, I recollected my previous births. In the middle watch of the night, I purified my clairvoyance. In the last watch of the night, I tore apart the mass of darkness. At the end of the night, as the sunrise grew near, Indra and Brahma came and paid homage to me with hands in Anjali. Homage to you, thoroughbred among men. Homage to you, supreme among men. Your defilements are ended. You, sir, are worthy of offerings. When he saw me honored by the assembly of gods, the teacher smiled and said the following: by austerity and by the holy life, by restraint and by taming, by this one is a holy man, this is the supreme holiness. Okay, so here we have the story of somebody's practicing, realizing the Dhamma. Like many of the Theragata verses, it's a celebration of that practice, but it has the sort of additional pathos, I guess, of the birth in the low-class family. Now, in Buddhist, one of the fundamentals of Buddhist philosophy is that caste is something which is irrelevant, actually usually harmful, and the Buddha was consistently critical of the notion of caste. And here we're sort of subverting the whole thing. It begins with the idea that you're born in a low-class family. Those who would, like a rubbish disposal, getting rid of the old flowers was one of the lowest of all occupations. And yet in that last verse, the Buddha is saying that one is a holy man, i.e. a Brahman, so here I've translated Brahman as holy man, is by practicing the Dhamma and realizing the Dhamma within yourself. So this again is very typical of the Buddhist teaching, is to completely subvert that notion of caste. I think one of the messages here, you know, if you look at the social roles, in a sense, you know, you have that low caste person who's very humble and so on, and then meeting the Buddha, who's like the most exalted of all people, right? Now, that in itself is like a social differentiation, right? There's different strata of society, the very low and the very high. But the crucial thing is that the Buddha, as somebody who's at the very height of society, his role is to raise others up. His role isn't to maintain that hierarchy and to keep somebody down there in the mud, but his role is to say, you too can realize this freedom and this happiness, and to lift them out of that and to praise them for having achieved that transformation. So this is that, to me, is such a powerful aspect of the Buddha's teachings. What do you think, Matthew? What was your reaction to this?
I thought this was interesting, because he doesn't have to be a strong meditator to glance or to be held within the Buddha's circle, okay. You know. And I was interested in that. This was more when he was within the Buddha's sight,
yeah,
he immediately followed instructions. He didn't query.
That's right, didn't mess around,
no.
Didn't cause problems. Yeah.
And he brought a humbleness, because instead of being angry with the world for, in a sense, saying you're nothing, he walked through, and when he saw the Buddha, he was extremely respectful and he wasn't angry.
Yeah.
So I liked that aspect. Would that be fair enough to say?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, he wasn't being a victim.
No.
You know?
That's right.
Yeah, he changed. He changed his life. He had that opportunity. It's not fixed, you know? And even in India of those days, where it was, you know, there was the caste system and there was a lot of social rigidity and a lot of resistance to moving between those things, but still it was possible. Yeah? And to me, this is such an important part of what the Buddha's teachings do. In fact, this is something which is still very much the case in India today, particularly with how they call the untouchables or the Dalits, is that they are, sort of very much discriminated, essentially being like a slave caste, really. But the interesting thing is when they convert to Buddhism, all of their sort of social welfare metrics all get better, you know. The levels of education get better, the domestic violence drops down, healthcare goes up, all of those kinds of things all get better because they're no longer in that situation. As my friend Sissy Yeshe said before, it's not just society which is grinding them down, but God is grinding them down as well. God tells them, you deserve that.
Yeah.
You know? So that's what's really sort of soul crippling.
Yeah.
So to be able to get out from that and to from that kind of religious doctrine which is telling you need to be in that kind of situation, to have a religious doctrine which is telling you that you can transform, that you have the potential, you have the power, right? It's up to you to make that change. And this is such an incredible, empowering teaching.
Is that the equivalent of the Christian notion of grace, or, you know, that attitude that the lowly man brings when he sees, or what is that moment where, it's not self-deprecating, he's the acknowledgement and bringing the best of yourself to...
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure how the notion of grace is used. Yeah. I mean, it's certainly not grace in the sense of sort of having something bestowed on you.
No.
Right?
No.
There is obviously within some of the sayings in the Gospels and so on that the meek shall inherit the earth and this idea. I mean, the Buddha's teaching was not so much that, right? I mean, that's in a sense an inversion of the social order. The Buddha's is more like just...
Yeah.
I mean, the problem with the meek inherit the earth is that, well, the meek are going to pretty soon become the overlords, right?
Yeah, that's right.
You know, so
that's
the problem.
Still status oriented.
Right. So the Buddha was more, in a way, more gentle, but actually more radical. You know?
Okay.
It was like, this whole thing is just irrelevant.
Yeah.
Who cares who inherits the
earth?
Yeah. That's what it's about.
Yeah, yeah. I get it. Yeah. Mm. And the last verse?
Uh-huh. Yeah. So this is in the Buddha's voice, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's really... giving a teaching in a way, isn't he?
Yeah. And so you can see that, you know, that's actually an interesting example where, you know, a lot of the verses that we're finding here in the Theragata, and similarly a lot of the verses you find in Dhammapada and places like that, this is actually, sort of an example of sort of classic verse from the Dhammapada, that here those verses which we see in abstract is actually given a context. You know, we can see what the meaning of it is within that context. So, you know, the imagery and the ideas which the Buddha is using were very much pertinent for that time and place. I guess in our time and place, we'd have our own way of thinking about these things and our own way of expressing them. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, great.
Thanks
so much, Lucy.
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for being with us, and we hope you enjoyed Dhamma Threads.